From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
When shorter, colder days have us indoors more, a bit of botanical company can make it all a lot brighter. Today's show has suggestions for some winter solstice decorating, for bringing a bit of nature indoors for the off-season to reconnect us with the garden and provide some cheer. And not just the obvious holiday centerpiece or wreath, but the right succulents for winter bloom and easy care, and some unexpected found goodies from outdoors to call into action too, and how to make them last. More in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
My guest today is Kathy Tracy, co-owner with her husband Chris of Avant Gardens Nursery in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, a source for exceptional plants in person and by mail. They're also known for their design services and popular how-to classes, including lots of botanical crafty ones. Hi, Kathy. Are you feeling crafty? How are you?
Hello, Margaret. So nice to be with you again.
Yeah, no, long time no see or whatever. I've been kind of indoors more, although it's been unseasonably warm so far, but still I've been indoors more and I'm like, okay, how can I brighten it up in here? And I think most of the birds took all my winterberry hollies, but whatever, from outside. But, you're someone that I really turn to for inspiration on, sort of the aesthetic part. You have such a strong aesthetic eye, and like I teased you, you're crafty as well. So, I mean, at your house, I don't figure it's like a traditional, full-on holiday decor, knowing your other work and so forth and your style. I assume it's a little more naturalistic and more subtle. So what are some of the things that you're doing this holiday season indoors, or not even holiday, just winter?
But with the winter solstice are the shorter days, and nature is becoming, outdoors is becoming more brown all the time, but we do have evergreen branches that we can cut. Over the years, we have planted lots of wonderful conifers on our property, and it's a nice time to do a little pruning, bringing in those branches to put on windowsills with strings of white lights. Brightens up the home a little bit, and we're not going to all the trouble of putting up a Christmas tree and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Have you ever used, you said white lights. I think it was on your blog, on the Garden Foreplay blog, and I'll give the link with the transcript of this show to that, where you post all kinds of interesting things. I think I saw you use the white lights even with like your amaryllis and so forth. Like you really took it to the next step. It was just like, here are some amaryllis, which we all know and is like ubiquitous, but you sort of made it even better. Tell us about that.
I just took strings of white lights and laid them around the base of the pots. And in the evening, the lights illuminated the amaryllis and pots of begonias. And so it was very festive. In the daytime, it looks wonderful. But at night, there's a little less light. So using your little sparkling string of holiday lights brightens up.
Yeah. Did you ever try those ones that are they LED battery sort of operated or whatever? Do you know what I mean? The ones that don't even need to be plugged in? Yeah.
The fairy lights, I think they're called. Oh. there's a little less glow, but you don't need to have an outlet nearby. You can tuck the battery charger under a branch of evergreens and it gets disguised that way. And that's quite nice too. So yes, that was really nice to kind of bring in flower color as well as making it festive indoors.
Right. So you just were mentioning amaryllis are kind of like houseplants. And let's, even though I said in the introduction, we're going to talk about some sort of non-traditional things, they are kind of traditional, but one of the things you do is you are good about keeping them year to year, I think, the aftercare and so forth. And do you find that they all go to sleep on schedule? Like what happens at sort of at the end of bloom season? What do you do? So here we have this nice indoor winter display and then there's greenery. And then what do you do?
So when the flowers fade, you should remove the flower head so that they don't form seeds, because that takes energy from the bulb. But the leaves will remain green for some time, and you should let the leaves stay on the plant so they can photosynthesize. That brings energy into the bulb. Water and occasionally fertilize with an all-purpose fertilizer during the growing season. Once it gets warm outside in May, you can bring your pots out to maybe a partially shaded spot. And, you know, water as needed. But when we get towards the end of summer, late August, September, you want to start withholding watering and encourage the foliage to die back and give it a cool period. And that's sort of the key to get the bulbs to think about taking that break they need and having enough of a rest, but come into bloom for the winter holidays. Now, that being said, how do you cool plants off in late summer when it's still quite warm? Some people might have a cool basement or a refrigerator that they have room to tuck plants in. I have one in my garage. And you can, if you don't have room for putting a potted plant in your refrigerator, you can unpot the plant right then and remove the soil and store the bulb in a baggie and keep it in a chill spot, like a 45 to 50 degree refrigerator, and leave it there for 2 months.
So that's not the refrigerator that you're using for your food right now. It's not 45 or 50 in your current refrigerator, just so people understand that. Do you know what I mean? In your home fridge.
I think it can be a little cooler. It can be, go down to 40. I think my refrigerator is 43 degrees. So.
Right.
And if you have room in your regular refrigerator, you can put them in there, but most of us don't have that space to spare.
Yeah.
And then in November, pull out those bulbs. If they're bare root, pot them up. If they're still in their pots, just bring it out into the light. And here's a key. Water them just once. Soak them and then just wait. And that takes patience, because you're thinking, okay, come on, let's see some green here.
Right.
Don't water again until you start seeing signs of green from the center of the bulb.
Okay.
And then once you start seeing green, then you can get on a regular watering schedule as needed. And if you want to, you can give them a little phosphorus, high phosphorus fertilizer.
Okay.
So now that's not what I always do. For example, this year, I completely forgot about the amaryllis until we started talking about them and realized that they had been sitting in the greenhouse under a bench where they were maybe not getting total darkness, but it was darker and they weren't getting watered. They still have green leaves on them as I speak, but they are starting to kind of lose those leaves. What will happen now that the greenhouse is cool, it's in the 45, 50 degree range at night, and then the daytime it warms up a bit more. The bulbs will grow. They will try to send up flower shoots, but I probably won't see flowers until late February or maybe even March.
Right. So it'll still go through the process, but it won't go through it on the same schedule.
That's it.
So speaking of these are sort of like indoor house planty kind of plants. I mean, I feel another thing we can do to kind of make it a little more festive inside is call some of our house plants into action, you know. And I know that at this time of year, I'm trying to give everybody the most light that they can and so forth. But some of them I'm gonna like move into a spot, you know, at least temporarily, like on the table, and really enjoy it more, you know. And I know you really use your houseplants, and I say houseplants because a lot of yours are in greenhouses and stuff. I say it in quotes, more creatively. Didn't you tell me you just made like an arrangement the other day where you used one of your sansevierias as the sort of centerpiece of it?
Right. The snake plant. One of the easiest house plants, of course, to grow. They need very little. In fact, you'll kill them if you overwater them.
Right.
So withhold watering. I should mention that they are toxic to pets, but, you know, pet owners are pretty on top of these things too.
Right.
But yeah, the dramatic vertical thrust of those leaves of the snake plant or Sansevieria really looked striking in an urn that I had. And I tucked in some ivy at the base, and it was bringing the outdoors indoors for a winter display. And you could put strings of lights on something like that and have a lovely little illuminated decor in your home.
I think the ivies, you just mentioned the ivies, and some of the ones in the houseplant department, some of them may have beautiful variegation, even like golden green and whatever, you know, and that could be an easy, inexpensive kind of addition to this type of, do you know what I mean? If we're going to adopt something.
Right. And ivy are very easy forgiving houseplants. I mean, you can let them get quite dry. I mean, you'll know if you've let it gone for too long. I think people err on the side of either watering too much or not watering at all. And it just means that you have to pay attention to your plants a little bit. But ivy are forgiving. If they get a little bit on the dry side, they hydrate so quickly with a good soaking.
Right. So we're going to kind of call some of our houseplants into action. And, you know, in the garden center right now, the houseplant department is usually, you know, because they're thinking gifty ideas, they want you to, you know, buy some. And there's some interesting things. And you're kind of like the succulent queen, you know, you have this incredible mastery of succulents and, you know, indoors and outdoors and so forth. But I'm better with the ones outdoors and not so good with the ones for indoors. And I wondered, are there any that really figure into sort of indoor that can be happy in the winter with us living indoors? Which ones do I have the best shot
at? Well, if you have a sunny window, then the aloes, and there are many besides the aloe vera plant that we know for medicinal purposes for skin salves. There are miniature aloes that have been bred, and these little cuties come in an array of tones from almost white leaves through various shades of green to coral red colors. And often they have these little raised flecks that adds to the texture. Some have been given names like holiday things like Christmas sleigh, blizzard, snowstorm, snowdrift. These little gems don't need much at all except some bright light. Water them. And the question on watering succulents, here is what I usually suggest to folks. Once you've watered your succulent, feel how heavy the pot is. We have this memory of how heavy things are when we go to pick it up the next time. And when you feel that the pot is light, that's when you water them and give them a good soaking, and then let them dry out in between the waterings.
Right. So do it by feel.
Yeah. I find, unless, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes because they don't wilt. So, you know, and everybody's home is different. Some people keep their houses very warm and there's lots of dry air. And those factors will dry out plants more quickly than, say, if you keep it cooler, like in the 60s, like our old house.
Yeah.
And that has an effect on how much water the plants take up.
Well, so speaking of, you know, dry indoors and inhospitable to certain kinds of plants, especially, you know, people shouldn't feel bad right now if some of their houseplants, you know, I'm saying, hey, let's like showcase some because they're so beautiful. Well, some are looking downright unhappy. You know what I mean? They had a nice time in the humidity outdoors all season, and then they came in, you know, and the heat's on and so forth, and it's dry and nasty. And so like some of my begonias, my rhizomatous begonias, my fancy leaf begonias, you know, some don't hold up as well as others in the winter. It doesn't mean they're dying. It just means they're sulking, right? And we have to know what to do. So do you have any that really are more durable, more bulletproof in the winter indoors? And also, what should we do there as far as the watering, not watering? Is there, I'm afraid what people do is they start feeding them, and that's the worst thing to do, I think.
You're correct.
In the winter, I mean.
You're correct. You know, they're going into a little bit of shock because the days are getting shorter and our homes are dry. And although begonias don't want to be in wet soil, they do appreciate humidity. They look their best, I thought, this year in September. We suddenly started getting more rainfall and the humidity factor just brighten them all up. But then we bring them indoors and we've got our dry heat. And many of the fancy leaf varieties just, like you said, sulk. It's time to ignore them, really. One selection I've always been impressed with because it has a more textured leaf, Art Hodes. The upper side is a pebbly olive green, and the underside has reddish tones. So it kind of works with sort of the holiday color scheme, and it gets occasional white flowers throughout the year, but most heavily in the wintertime.
Oh.
That one seems to be more forgiving of indoor dry conditions. But right. What I would do to kind of help with the humidity is perhaps set a tray of pebbles underneath the pot.
Right.
And fill that with water. So as the water evaporates around the plant, it does give sort of a little air of humidity around where the plant is growing.
And that variety, that begonia, is Art Hodes, is H-O-D-E-S, A-R-T, like Arthur, whatever. And H-O-D-E-S is the name of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've had that we've had for about 25 years.
Wow.
I don't even remember where we... who we got the plant from. It's not commonly available, but it's a very easy plant to grow. It's an easy plant to propagate. And it's one of my top begonia recommendations.
Okay. So if we go outdoors, and obviously we're not talking about going foraging on someone else's property or on public land, we're talking about going outside right around where we are. There's some goodies in all of our yards. You mentioned at the beginning some evergreen, you know, bits and bobs we could take from, you know, judiciously off some evergreens that we're growing. But there's other things too. I mean, I mentioned that I, you know, normally I have winterberry at this time. But when we take a branch of anything, how do we condition it to make it last indoors? You know, what's the...
Woody plants. It's helpful to split the stem at the base so that water gets taken up. A simple cut often isn't enough. And by splitting the branch, I mean, take the cut end and then use your pruners to kind of do a little incision to split the stem. And water gets absorbed so much better that way.
Okay.
I should mention that winterberry, someone... asked me the other day why they didn't have any fruit this year on their winterberry plant.
Yeah.
And they had a bumper crop last year. Winterberries, Ilex verticillata, they bloom on old wood. So if you're doing a very ambitious cut on your winterberry for a display this year, you may be sacrificing your bloom in berries next year.
Right.
So be careful when you are taking those cuts that you don't decimate the whole plant.
Right. In a droughty year like I had here, they can really perform less, even if I didn't prune or take any at all.
That's true, too.
You know, a droughty year, because, you know, a lot of plants that are trying to produce fruit, they'll drop part of their crop or all their crop in self-defense so they don't die in a drought. You know, so there's that, too. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
So what about, like, I mean, other goodies like cones and who knows what else that's out there that we should be on the lookout for? Any other tricks?
Last week we had a tremendous windstorm came through. Rain, wind, I mean, the house shook. It's an old house, but it shook. And the next morning I went out and there were branches everywhere. We have an ancient oak tree on our property. And some of those branches from the tree that had old man's beard moss and lichen on them had come down.
Oh.
But when I looked at them, I thought, wow, I could use this in a wreath or an arrangement. The silvery white and mossy green really is a nice way to bring a little color and texture indoors. The same holds true with all the pine cones that fell, you know, that hadn't, you know, weren't on the ground already. We have a lot of white pine in our area. And of course, gathering those pine cones is not causing any harm at all.
Right, because they're in the street or whatever, or they're in your driveway or they're on your patio or whatever. And so they're down already.
Yes. Yeah.
That's... So the lichen, that would be, so some of the branches that fall after a storm with like lichen covering it. So that would be gorgeous.
I think so.
Yeah. Huh. Oh yeah, that's a good idea. And with that, we're not trying to put them in water and keep them. I mean, right? It's like we can
Right.
just use
They'll
them on it. Yeah.
just dry naturally.
Yeah.
Even what we also found little patches of moss, green moss, and I don't know the correct botanical name for the moss that grows on our
Yeah.
oak tree, but it's this brilliant green. And I gathered little patches of that had fallen down, and I'll tuck that in plant pots, especially if there's like bare soil showing, and it kind of dresses the pot a little bit. I've actually even used that around aloes. Remember, we're not watering the moss. We're not trying to keep it alive, or we possibly could try to keep it alive. But when I tucked it among my little aloes and other succulent plants in pots, it kind of dressed up the soil a little bit and added some bright green.
Right. I want to go back to the house plants again, in our last 3, 4 minutes or so, because I'm suddenly thinking, oh, I should have done this and I should have gotten that, and I'm having some ideas. What are some other, I mean, I this year I grew for the first time. I saw it at the time of year in the garden center when all the annuals were out. They had syngoniums, which are a house plant with like a sort of arrow-shaped leaf, I guess I would call it. Is that what you would call it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's in the aroid family,
Yeah.
and the breeders have developed some beautiful leaf forms, ranging from white into peachy pinks, in different shades of green.
Yeah.
And that's an easy plant that we can bring indoors. I think it likes a bit more humidity, but we know that we can kind of maybe bring it into the bathroom, once a week when we're running the shower, hot shower, and that will help hydrate the plant.
Yeah, I've been really impressed because I bought it, as I said, for to use in with some annuals, some more traditional annuals as kind of my foliar filler. And when I, at the end of the season, I saw them out there in the pots, and I thought, oh, I'm going to try these as a house plant because they're frequently sold as a house plant. And I've been really impressed with how they didn't miss a beat. So that's something that, like, in terms of the way that Art Hodes begonia, sort of an investment plant, do you know what I mean? That we can use in our outdoor
Sure.
displays, our indoor displays. I'm kind of impressed that these are pretty tough characters.
That's a great suggestion. I mean, some of us grow caladium as bulbs. Of course, they don't hold up as house plants at all, but they
Right.
do go dormant, and then you can wake them up in late spring once we start getting into warmer weather. But the syngonium would be a nice alternative to like white caladium leaves because it gives a similar look
It
to
is a, it's
any
a good point. It's a
planter.
similar look. You're right. And yet you don't have to rest it and then start it up again. So we'll see. This is my first year, but they haven't missed a beat at all, outside or inside. So who knows? Who knows?
Another low light house plant or tropical plant is peperomia. And
Yes.
peperomia are quite easy as long as you don't overwater them. Most of them are succulents. They have a succulent, thick succulent leaf. But again, so many new selections have been introduced in various shades of green, and there are quite a few species. I mean, I'm not sure what the number is like, but it's up there with the number of species that are available. But again, if low light is a problem, peperomia would be a good choice. There's the popular, there's also pileas too, which the
Yes.
delicate little artillery fern pilea. There's a variegated one, and then the straight species. And then there's the Chinese money plant. And
Oh, that crazy thing. Yes, that was so popular.
people get confused because there's a Pilea peperomioides, which is the Chinese money plant.
Yes.
And then there is Peperomia polybotrya, which is also a Chinese money plant, but it has more teardrop-shaped leaves. And of course, Pilea has a different flower form than Peperomia. So that's one way to distinguish the two.
Yeah.
But at first, you could easily be confused when you look at them because of the
Well,
common name.
I've tried the former but not the latter, but I can now go look for it. So thank you. And Kathy, thank you for making time today to talk to us about some alternative ways, both with a little foraging out in the yard after a windstorm and cutting branches and calling our houseplants into service and so forth. So thanks for making time today. I hope I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Margaret. This was great.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening indoors and out in the meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.